The next question. Marijuana laws have received a lot of attention this year. When it comes to medical marijuana, doctors can now recommend it to patients who are critically ill. If you had a family member who was critically ill, would you support the use of medical marijuana in your home to ease their pain? Mr. Craig?
You can actually take out whether it was a family member or not. No, I do not support that. It is not a good idea. When the Volstead Act was passed, there were people able to get permission to get alcohol because it was a health care issue. That was made up. It was just something that the industry wanted. That is the way it is. If there is a chemical in marijuana that can be used to help someone get through pain, it can be taken out and given as a medicine. It doesn't have to be done that way. But encouraging this is only going to expand it to try to make marijuana itself either delegalized or decriminalized or legalized. And that is going to make our society much worse. I do not want my grandchildren to go to a doctor or a dentist or a teacher and know that they were smoking marijuana during the day. I don't. If you look at Colorado, what's going on out there, their death rate on fatalities on highways is increasing because of marijuana use, because it distracts your attention. So it's not just the medical marijuana issue. It extends beyond that. If you have a good physician would know how to help you get through that pain issue without saying it has to be marijuana.
Mr. George.
Thank you so much. I have that degree in clinical psychology. I understand what cannabis does to the brain, and especially the developing brain. The more we legalize marijuana, the more the younger people are using it. That's where I have a problem, mainly. Now, did I vote for the medical marijuana bill that we passed in 2013, and we corrected a little bit this year? Yes, I did. I happen to know that some young people that have seizures, if you take out the drug component, the THC components, it helps them. It helps them with their seizures. It's all right. It doesn't have the drug part in it. I do know that a woman was dying of cancer, and she wanted to be there for her family. And it's restricted. It was in the hospital use. It was in a way that no one else can be growing it. There's no one growing it at home or grow your own or any of those type of things. But in restricted medicinal use like that, I'm okay with that. But I wouldn't expand it beyond that. Thank you.
Mr. Hogan.
Well, it's obviously an issue that everyone's focused on here in the state because we just had this big debate in Annapolis during the last session about legalization or about decriminalization, and they're all they're really different issues. I've talked with people who have really been suffering, cancer patients, and people really that are going through terrible pain, and they say that this is one of the things that really helps them. I was a cabinet secretary in the Ehrlich administration when we actually passed the first medical marijuana bill. Wasn't strong enough. It didn't allow enough people to get the use of it. But I'm very much opposed to, at this point, considering the expansion of any legalization here in the state. You know, the governor of Colorado has warned other governors, saying that there were a lot of unforeseen consequences that they didn't envision when they passed this bill. Two states have already tried to do legalization. I think we ought to be very cautious and see what happens in those states. But for medical uses, for people that are really in need, as your question was, a family member or anyone's family member that's going through that kind of suffering, they should, if that's what their doctor believes is what's necessary to help them, I think it's something we have to be able to allow them to do.
Thank you. And Mr. Lawler.
You know, this does not have to be a divisive issue. It really doesn't. We have to be very careful with the slippery slope where these types of conversations go. I refuse to let this be a Republican versus Democrat issue because it's not. It really is about responsibility, and I'm tired of these laws that are pushed forward to hurt Maryland first. Whether it's the medicinal use of marijuana or whether it's the legalization of marijuana, it's something that I stand against, and I'm very firm with that, only because we've been treating and helping patients with pain for years, and we've been doing it without using marijuana. Marijuana is not the only thing for someone or a family member that's hurting that they can turn to use to ease the pain. There's other things that can be used that are currently being used today. Why such a debate and such a heated contention about marijuana use? I think it springs down a road for other purposes. And a lot of times, I think they're partisan. I heard one of my peers on the other side of the aisle mention it's time for the grown-ups in the room to talk about legalizing marijuana and bringing more money into the state coffers as a result, instead of thinking about better ways to balance our budgets and be more responsible with the money they currently have. They're spending over $40 billion of your tax money. So this doesn't have to be divisive. Please understand. There's so many ways to treat patients. And doctors, I've talked to doctors. I've even talked to sheriffs about this marijuana issue. And it's out of control with our kids, along with heroin addictions. We have to do the best job we can to fight it. And isn't it ironic that we live in a state that's trying to stop people from smoking cigarettes, but now we're talking about legalizing marijuana?
Our next question comes from our audience here, and it has to do with education.
I wondered, do you have any proposals for equitably and adequately funding school construction given different local tax bases and differing needs, such as aging schools in Baltimore City and overcrowding or mold abatement in suburban schools?
Mr. Lawler.
First and foremost, it starts with ensuring that the educational dollars that are set aside are being used appropriately and responsibly. I cannot underscore enough with you all. Again, this is not a Republican or Democrat issue. How much wasteful spending goes on in Annapolis? How many funds are raided every time they're in session, taking one pot of money here and putting it elsewhere? This gambling bill is a really good example. Where was the money supposed to go? Supposed to go to education. I'm sure it wouldn't surprise you that that money went to three other funds to include education. A lot of times that money is supposed to go there for the buildup of those schools, so we can have better schools and education, so we can have better classrooms. The money doesn't get to its proper intended purpose. What will our policy do? We would like to see parents and their students have school choice. So if a parent wants to send their child to a private school, a charter school, or a regular school, their tax dollars will follow their decision. I believe that our education system is not as homogenous as it was in the 1900s. Our kids learn differently. So different academic schools and systems are going to come out of the woodworks, maintain proper standards, and compete for your children to go to their schools, which will ease overcrowding in so many schools. It'll help the education environment all the way around. So first and foremost, we got to make sure the money's being spent properly. Secondly, by allowing for school choice and tax dollars to follow, it's going to ease up some of the pressures off those schools so we can start using the money to make sure that we're building better schools where these students are, because having 35 to 37 students in one classroom from one teacher in Baltimore City is unacceptable.
Thank you, Mr. Hogan.
Well, since 2002, here in Maryland, we have doubled spending on education. You know, the Thornton formula required it, and we did it during the Ehrlich administration, and this administration has continued it. We're spending a lot of money on education. The great news is, in some places, we have fantastic schools. In Howard County, for example, or if you're lucky enough to live in Montgomery County, they have some of the best schools in the nation. But the difference between and the gap between underperforming schools, say in Baltimore City or in some other areas and those other schools, is dramatic. And it's not just the money problem, because we're actually spending more money in Baltimore City than we are in other places, and we're not getting the same results. During the Ehrlich administration, we passed the first charter schools legislation, which I think is one of the things that, you know, we need to offer people an opportunity, because we shouldn't, you know, punish kids because of where they live. If you live in a great neighborhood, you get to go to a great school. If you live in a tough neighborhood, you're stuck, and you don't get the opportunity to get the education the other kids are. Charter schools have done wonderful things across the country, in New York City, in Chicago, in Detroit. You know, we passed legislation that was watered down by the Democrats in the legislature, and a report just came out and said we're 50th in the nation for charter schools. So it's one of the things. But we are spending a lot of money. It's not the only answer. We've got to get communities involved and parents involved. We need to push the money down to the local level, put it into the classrooms with teachers, parents, and students making decisions instead of politicians and labor unions.
Mr. George.
Yes. Just very briefly, then I'll get to the construction, because that was the question, right? But I do support the charter schools. I led a fight when they wanted to change the funding formula that would have killed them on the state House floor in 08. And we killed that on the floor. And I served on the National Board for Homeschoolers, so I get it with school choice. It's nice to have all those choices out there. But I will say this on school construction. I do support the BOST program, where businesses get a tax credit in order to donate towards school construction. I see no problem with that. It saves the state money. People think we're going to lose money by giving that credit. We make it up more on the other end when they're donating to the schools. That and the public-private partnerships are very, very important. I had a proposal back in 2007 and 2008 to allow for public-private partnerships where people could donate that money and be able to get the credit and be able to build, and it would help. I have no problem if Under Armour's name was on the side of a gymnasium. We're building some Taj Mahals in this state while other schools are suffering. A little less on those, a little more to those schools that are suffering as part of it, too. Delegate Kathy Vitale, my seatmate on the House floor, had a bill this year that that I co-sponsored that was a trial basis for the public-private partnership. I looked at it. I have an economics finance background. I can tell you it is solid, and I think you all should get behind it this next year because doing that test pilot program will prove it can work. Thank you.
And Mr. Craig.
All right, I'm just going to concentrate on your question. Hopefully somebody else ask an educational question later. I'm the one with experience that actually did it. I'm the county executive. When I became the county executive in 2005, I sat with the superintendent and our board and said, "What's our we need to come up with a 10-year plan." We spent $500 million to go school construction, built 6 new schools, have 2 more that will be under construction soon to make sure that we had good new schools. And that can be done. For Baltimore City, you have about 200 schools in Baltimore City, but you only have attendance that would be for about 100. But you still want to have community schools. Community schools are very important. It's not just saying every school has to be a certain size. Sometimes it may be a very small school. We have that in Harper County. I go to Norrisville Elementary, and there are only 19 children per grade level. But we still want a school in that area because you don't want those children to get on a bus for 45 minutes to get somewhere else. So we actually have the experience to have done it. And that $500 million, our debt is still below the average person's credit card debt. So we know how to do it. We've actually done it. That's what I would encourage you to think about when you look for who you want to vote for governor, because I have been around to all the different counties and I know which schools they have, because we do want the new technology. We want them to be safe. We want security in these schools. So you need the ICT things, but you also need to make sure that nobody can break into a school at any given time. I was an assistant principal. I had to deal with that situation. So worked there for 34 years. We'll get it done.
Thank you. With the Columbia Mall shooting this past winter and the mass shooting in San Diego, gun laws are being debated in families all across Maryland. Do you support efforts to make personal defense a justification for a concealed carry permit? Mr. Craig.
Yes. We'll start with the fact that NRA just gave me an A rating on that. There was just a shooting not long ago just in California. And some people came out and said we need to have more gun control, but they realized that 3 of the people that died had been stabbed. They never talked about knife control. We do need to have the right, our Second Amendment rights, to defend ourselves. We need to have the right to concealed carry and shall issue. That is what people should have the ability to do, because the states that have those have lower murder rates than the states that don't have that. And I can tell you, as the Harper County executive, we are the safest county in the state of Maryland in which to live. We have a lower murder rate and a lower criminal rate than any other county. It's lower than it was up until 1983. We have no extra gun control rules and regulations there. What is it that makes it safe? We have a good, very good sheriff, a very good sheriff's office, very good deputies who know how to get out there and protect you. And we also have a good state's attorney who knows how to go through prosecution. We have a good correctional facility to help people when they're in there. So it is not just about gun control. There are enough laws out there already to make sure that you're protected if you choose not to own a gun. But we still need to defend those rights that our founders came up with back in the 1700s.
Mr. George.
One of the statistics that hurt that came out this morning is that the black-on-black crime is through the roof and murders, but it's mainly in 3 cities, and they include Washington, D.C., Chicago's another, there's one more. And those cities have all had strong gun laws, and they've outlawed guns, and the murder rate's gone up. It's way up, and they lead the nation. In fact, those 3 have more than the rest of the country combined, and they're the 3 that have those total gun controls. I think every woman needs a ability to protect herself when she feels it's urgently needed. But I do believe in people getting courses for gun safety and things of that sort. I do believe in conceal and carry. I'm a jewelry store owner. I and my sons are a target. I get it firsthand. There was a time I got strange phone calls in the middle of the night about myself, my family, and my business. Luckily, I already had a gun in a gun safe. But I got to tell you, if I had to go through it and it was going to take 3 weeks to get one, that's not the way to go. It's not. The crime rates have dropped in every state that has allowed you to be able to get the gun to protect yourself. When people feel that you don't have a gun, they're more likely to feel more powerful. The criminals do. So I'm just really for people to be able to protect themselves, and I think that's very important. I'm looking at the stats, and the stats show that crime rate drops when you do. Thank you.
Mr. Hogan.
I think we need to do more to keep guns out of the hands of the mentally ill and more out of the hands of criminals. I think we need tougher mandatory sentences on crimes committed with guns. I believe we should have instant background checks. There's a federal system that does instant background checks for most states in the country. Here in Maryland, we're not participating in the system, and we should be. Instead, we take 150 days for the state police to be tied up when they should be out doing other police work, and they're doing this research on their own. We're one of the few states in the country that doesn't upload information to the federal system. We don't track mental illness. You know, that's really, obviously, I agree with the guys who said some of the toughest gun laws in the country are in places where we have the biggest amount of gun crime going on. So that's not really just the answer. We've got to look at this from every side. I support the Second Amendment. I think we ought to do more to keep the guns out of the hands of the mentally ill and people that are criminals. We shouldn't take away the rights of law-abiding citizens under the Second Amendment.
Thank you.
When the gentleman's done, I would like just a chance. I have 15 seconds left, and I would like a chance to.
Excellent. Mr. Lawler.
Yes, this is another issue that doesn't have to be a divisive when it really doesn't. We've had more confrontative conversations across political aisles about this issue over the past 2 to 3 years than I care to admit. And you've been forefront probably on all of them, just looking at watching them on your television station. September the 30th, when this Second Amendment, this attack against the Second Amendment was done, but the Senate bill was passed, I didn't see one criminal step up to turn in their AR-15, not one. There were no lines of those that actually had weapons that were illegal that actually just signed up to turn them in. The problem with a lot of these laws that are geared toward gun control is they hurt law-abiding citizens first. Just consider that. Because those that get these weapons illegally or on the black market or otherwise, they're doing so and they're doing them illegally. I'm a big fan of honoring the laws and keeping the laws we currently have on the books, supporting our local law enforcement, supporting our local sheriffs, ensuring that that our state troopers are working side by side in a good working relationship with our local law enforcement. But I don't want this conversation to evolve and escalate to where we are putting a stranglehold or we're putting a harness on law-abiding citizens when it comes to their weapons. And when our founding fathers initially put forward our Constitution, the Second Amendment, it was to ensure that we had freedoms so we could protect those freedoms, whether in our homes or in our nations. So I absolutely agree with the Second Amendment, and yes, I do. The answer to your question is absolutely, I would.
And a reminder that we have 60 seconds for rebuttal. So, Mr. George, you
have
60
seconds. Well,
it's
not so much against what other people say, but just the mental health piece, having that clinical psychology degree, is very important to me. I had House Bill 969 in the 2013 legislative session that was a mental health piece. The Maryland Psychological Association and school psychologists and others liked the bill very much. It allowed there to be a referral process. The mother in Connecticut felt she had no place to turn. Others would be able to call this number. If money was an issue, they had a referral process. There was a way to get people helped. When people saw this downward spiral in attitude and test scores or job performance and the depressive disorders coming on, there was a place to turn. We don't have that now. As governor, I will get that passed. I also have a top rating from NRA, I guess, so I don't know if that matters. Thank you.
I just have one piece to add. After the bill was passed, and many of you know about this bill as Marylanders, came into play in September the 30th. January the 1st of this year, in the first 14 days, there were 13 crimes committed with a weapon in Baltimore City alone in the first 14 days of the year. So how did this law do anything to stop the current problem? We don't have to throw more laws at this issue. We just have to resolve that we're going to keep the ones that we currently have and trust in our law-abiding citizens. I want to make sure that point is made. It's very important.
Any other rebuttals?
No.
Okay.